You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Joining me now is Gerard Lordahl, who is director of the Open Space Greening Program, Department of the Environment in the City of New York. And he visits us every so often to answer your questions on gardening and other horticultural matters. And we take your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. It's always great to see you, Gerard.
Same here, Leonard. Good to be here.
We've been doing this pretty much since I started doing the show, which is almost 25 years ago.
That's right. It started when we had the big drought back in 86, and you brought a bunch of garden-related people onto the show to talk about what people can do in New York City to continue gardening, even though the city was restricting watering.
Well, we don't have a drought this year, Gerard.
No, that's for sure. 19 straight days in June of rain. The gardeners have really worn out their rain gear, that's for sure, this year. And it's really caused a lot of havoc, as you know.
Well, you can't give them too little water and you can't give them too much water. Is that it?
Yeah, the extremely wet June has caused a lot of problems in promoting a lot of diseases. And as you know, in the New York Times recently, Dan Barber wrote that really good article about late blight on tomatoes. Late blight was a fungus that attacked and killed, created the potato famine. But for us gardeners today, it affects our tomatoes in the garden.
So it goes after anything that ends with Ado?
Yeah, exactly. I brought you a sample, Leonard, of late blight on tomatoes.
Do you
see the tomatoes I brought? Yeah,
those are. Oh, I was wondering. I thought, why is Gerard bringing me these things that look like they got ugly stuff on them?
I was in the garden this morning, and I figured, let me bring you some. It's for your listeners, if you don't know whether you might have late blight on your tomatoes, they start out as spots on the leaves, and then they progress, and they're somewhat of a greasy, irregular spot that then creates like a dry, papery brown spot. And
now,
then you get it on the fruit as well. And you could see that greasy spot on that plum tomato is late blight.
Now, if I cut that off, would that still be an edible tomato?
Yes, and that's, I used those tomatoes last night, actually, and they were fine. So you just cut them off. The problem is it could kill the plant over time. So this is what's causing havoc in the garden. And some of my farmer friends at the green markets are complaining about the poor tomato crop that they have because of all the rain and other crops as well. David Graves, the bee farmer at the Union Square Green Market, he was telling me that because of all the rain in June, the bees are much less active and that there's going to be less honey, and that's going to cause problems because there are pollinators, of course, so we need them to have our fruits and vegetables.
Wait, so the bees don't go out in the rain?
Right. So he was
saying they have little bee umbrellas
because of all the rain that has prevented them and slowed them down. So for your listeners, if you want to help out our pollinators, plant things like sunflowers and cosmos and borage and clover and zinnia, and that'll help the bees catch up where, it's been tough for them to fly around in the heavy rains.
Now, there are two problems when it rains. One is there's more water than, I don't know, does it drown the plants?
Yeah, you can have oversaturation of water in the soil, and
especially if you're growing in pots, which I am,
without drainage.
Pots
are fine if
drainage.
It's drainage, but if there isn't drainage, you can get oversaturation, and roots need gas exchange. And if there's so much water that there's no ability for gas to exchange and go into to be taken up by the plants, that could cause this problem.
And then the other thing with rain is you don't get as much sunlight.
Right, because you have cloudier days. So, the gardeners have really been struggling. And with this heat, the high evening temperatures are also wreaking havoc in the garden because that's when these diseases do well. And just as a caution to the gardeners, when you're watering, try not to wet the leaves. That just exacerbates and makes the whole situation worse.
So
keep the water down to the roots.
So is it just tomatoes that have been affected this year?
No, there are all sorts of powdery mildew diseases that affect squash and pumpkins and cucumbers, and there are other diseases, verticillium wilt, and other fungi that actually attack the plants because of this wet weather. And also our ornamentals. Your roses are affected. Generally, lots of plants in the garden are being affected by this heavy rain.
Because I was going to ask you about that, because I understand with vegetables, they can become waterlogged, can't
right.
they? But with flowers, What's the difference?
Oh, any plant can be waterlogged. It could be a house plant that doesn't have proper drainage in the pot, or it can be oversaturation of soil in a garden, or if the soil is not draining properly, if you have a very heavy clay soil that doesn't allow the drainage, that won't allow the water to remove itself from the roots, and you'll have that saturation.
Now, you speak to many of the community gardeners around the city. Are they facing problems as well?
Oh, of course. The backyard gardener, the community gardener, the terrace gardener. There are over 600 community gardens registered under the Parks Department through Green Thumb. And they have incredible harvests. I mean, many of you go to the farmers markets that are connected to the green markets, but also the community gardens that grow their own vegetables and sell them through youth market projects, et cetera. But they are struggling just as well because of the weather. We're all affected by the weather. But despite the weather, the rain's held off. It's hot now in August. We are getting a harvest, but it has been a challenging summer.
And New York depends on this time of year to get certain vegetables because we have a very limited growing season.
Right. And as we understand, you know, with that heavy rain in June, the prices of vegetables are going to go higher. So people were smart to grow their own backyard vegetables.
My guest is Gerard Lordahl. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And Jim, from the West Side, you're on the air.
I think you want Joe. Is that it?
I guess it's... Oh, Joe. Yes, I misread. Yeah. I'm sorry, Joe.
Yeah, hi, Leonard. Hi, Gerard.
Hi.
Now we're going to the other extreme of the problem, which is heat. And for a terrace gardener like myself, and I go away, I travel, I go for a few days here and there, how do I keep stuff watered? What can I do? You know, I don't want to lose what I've got going here. And
great.
Second question, something's munching on my basil.
Okay.
Not me.
Great question.
It's one of the pestos that's out there.
Yes, exactly.
August is the month.
Pestos.
August is the month for vigilance in the garden. And, you know, because it's so hot, what you could do is mulch. And we recommend that gardeners put down a layer of bark chip, grass clipping, shredded newspaper, anything that will cover the soil and prevent evaporation from the soil.
Uh-huh.
Also, adding organic matter to your soil is going to help retain moisture. The other thing
so
is...
So could he put stuff like coffee grinds in there?
Coffee grinds, any vegetable matter from the garden. The other thing is intensive gardening. Try not to leave a lot of barren soil in the garden. When you plant close together, the leaves of the plant actually shade the soil and prevent evaporation. Large-leaved crops like... squash and pumpkin, those have very large leaves. And if you plant them with corn and beans, let's say, that will shade the soil from evaporating.
Uh-huh. Good. And what's munching on my basil?
It could be snails, not seeing exactly what's going on. Several things.
On the 14th floor?
Probably not, but it could be. You know, snails are in the soil. They're brought in from the nursery, and sometimes you don't see them because they're at night. Look for slime trails.
Okay.
It sounds disgusting, but they do leave a slime trail at night. It could be a chewing insect also, maybe Japanese beetle, maybe flea beetle, but try to be a little observant and see if you see that slime trail, and it could be snails, and in which case you could put a little sand on the top of your pot, and the snails and slugs will not be able to walk on sand.
Oh, I like that.
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling us. That is a concern of a lot of people. They don't want to just use insecticides all the time.
Right.
And I'd imagine that, do insecticides become diluted in this kind of rain?
No. I mean, they're still toxic, if that's what you mean. You don't want to use any kind of pesticides if you could help it. We, all the gardeners, most, you know, in the city are organic gardeners. They're not allowed to use pesticides. And for your listeners, things to do in the garden this time of year to keep pests away, remove any standing water. If you have buckets of water from the rain we had, that encourages insects and diseases. If you have fruit trees, peach trees, pear trees, apple trees, all that dropped fruit that's decaying on the ground, those are really good habitats for disease. And part of good biological control is removing that fruit or those leaves from the ground and doing a lot of cleanup.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And Mary Beth from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about blossom end rot. I've been growing tomatoes in containers with high nutrient organic soil that I purchased from Gardener Supply in Vermont. That's not a plug for them. But I started getting this thing that I identified by looking in a book as blossom end rot, and I called and they said put lime on the soil. Now, they weren't able to tell me, and I wondered, is it because of the heavy rain that all the calcium was taken up from the soil?
You're exactly right. What happens is the calcium leaches out of the soil, and the hot evening temperatures as well. It's actually dry spells as well that can cause the calcium from to be leached. But by adding that calcium, that lime will replenish the calcium that's deficient, that's causing that blossom end rot. And for the listeners that don't know what that is, sometimes on your tomatoes, on the end, the bottom basal part of the tomato, you will find like a brown sort of papery, corky type of lesion. And that's known as blossom end rot. And as she said, it's from a deficiency in calcium. And it also has to do with cool evening temperatures in the summer as well.
So should I continue adding lime because it keeps on raining?
You should add the lime, but test your soil. You shouldn't add the lime to the point where it goes over 7.0. Do you have a pH kit you can use?
I do.
Yeah, you should test it. Most of our vegetables prefer pH between 6.5 and 6.8. So if you see you're going over 6.8 to 7, you should stop adding the lime.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
And
you're
thank
welcome.
You for your call. And we have Clayton from West Babylon on the line now. So you're speaking to Gerard Lordahl.
Hello.
Hi, Clayton.
Hi, how are you? I was just a quick question. My tomatoes, which I grow in 5-gallon pails, they were growing great, and then it got the blight or whatever, and they're getting really beaten up. Somebody told me I have to get rid of that soil, that the fungus spores will be in the ground through next year.
Yeah, that's right. What farmers do is if they've diagnosed late blight or any of the fungal diseases that are in the soil, they will plant a different type of crop that following year and pull out what's diseased that current year. So, okay. Yes, if you know you have late blight because you see these telltale signs, and as I said before, late blight has these greasy, irregular-shaped gray spots on the leaves of the tomato, and sometimes you can get a ring of white mold that can develop around the spots as well in the wet weather. Blackened areas can also appear on the stems, and the fruits
right.
can also develop these large, irregularly-shaped greasy gray spots, then you should rogue out, pull out all of the diseased plants and grow a different type of crop. Put in fall planting of cabbage or broccoli or spinach or kohlrabi, but stay away from tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant, and peppers, and you'll be okay. good that way.
Okay.
All right, that's great. Thanks very much.
And thank you for calling us. And we are going to take a little break now. We'll be back with more of your calls to Gerard Lordahl, the director of the Open Space Greening Program, the Department of the Environment, the City of New York. And our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We're back with Gerard Lordahl, who is the director of the Open Space Greening Program, City of Council on the Environment, I guess it's called, City of New York.
That's right.
Which is a, you say, is a privately funded organization?
Yeah, we were formed in 1970 during the Mayor Lindsay administration to be a voice for New York City residents regarding the environment. So as many people know, we have over 50 green markets around the city where we encourage local regional farmers to bring in organic produce. And we also have community gardens that we've helped build. We work with kids in schools. We do recycling. And people can call us. We have a website as well, www.cenyc.org. And your listeners can download a lot of free information about gardening, environmental education, and where their local green markets are.
And you've also offered in the past people, you've given them the opportunity to send something that they were confused about into your office.
Yeah, it's funny. We get lots of packages from your listeners, samples of soil. Herman from Bethpage recently sent me a sample of his, he didn't know what he was growing. It was a wisteria that hadn't bloomed. So I recommended some things for him to do, like root pruning and fertilizing. So I get leaf samples, I get soil samples to test for pH. You have quite a following.
Let's go to Sherry from Long Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I had two questions. One is, actually, my plants seem blight-free, and I hope I'm not missing something, but my other plants, my cucumbers and eggplant, have lots of leaves that have both spots on them and holes, and I was wondering if I should leave those leaves on those, on the plants, and just let them fall off in their own time, or should I be pruning those back?
Yeah, no, you should leave them on. Holes in the leaves aren't the worst thing, and vegetable plants can still produce and be highly productive, even though they're being chewed by some insects. The concern might be if you have, like, powdery mildew. Does it look like powder on the leaves? If so, you know, don't wet the leaves when you water. Don't do an overhead sprinkler. Do a ground sprinkler or a soaker hose. Get the water directly to the roots, again, because these diseases are encouraged by splashing water droplets.
Right. I'd heard that. The only thing I'm concerned about, actually, is an overhead tree from my next-door neighbor is dropping some sap on the leaves. Is that a problem?
No, that's not a problem. The worst thing would be too much shade. You know, vegetables need at least 6 hours of direct sunlight. And most flowering ornamental plants, roses, zinnias, things like that, they need at least 4 to 6 hours of direct sunlight. So you may not get good fruit or flower production because of the lack of sun.
Okay. The other question I have is, this is my first season doing cucumbers, and as they're growing, there's like a prickly surface all over them. I'm not sure when the cucumbers are done. Should I consider them done when the prickly part is all smooth?
You'll know when the cucumber is at the size that you would normally buy one in the grocery store, so go by that. There are some prickly points on the cucumber and the vine, but that's not a problem. Just allow them to grow to the size you would buy them in the grocery store.
And they get prickly because they climb up walls?
Well, they have tendrils that they attach to. So It's just the nature of the cucumber. There is a disease, cucumber mosaic, that you have to look out for, but you should be okay if you have them growing in sun and they're trellised and you fertilize them. Organic material is great.
Joe from Fire Island asks, I have terrible snail infestation. How do I get rid of them?
Yeah.
And he wants something non-toxic, obviously.
Sure. Snails can be a problem. If you have a local skunk, skunks love to chew on snails as a delicacy, but most of us don't have that ability. So, again, there's snail and slug bait. If you go to any garden center, you have an option of buying. They use formaldehyde in this bait that you could put down in the garden, and then they're attracted to it, they eat it, and it kills them. Or like I suggested earlier, snails and slugs cannot walk on sand. And there's something...
Well, the sand won't hurt the plant?
No. You put sand on the top, and they can't crawl on it because it lacerates their body. And then there's something else. Get ready for this word, Leonard. Diatomaceous earth, which is actually crushed seashells that you could buy at the garden center. It's organic, and they can't walk on that either. So those are organic suggestions for slugs and snails.
Now,
then just pick them off.
Somebody called in to ask, what can I do to get rid of ants? Now, don't ants actually help if you're trying to garden?
Ants usually
aren't
a big problem.
Soil?
For us, like, people complain about ants on their peony buds, but they're only eating the sap on the peonies in the early spring. Carpenter ants are a problem chewing wood, but in the garden, ants are not much of a problem. You could put baits out, but most gardeners I know don't really fuss with ants.
John from Brooklyn wanted to know, I grow lettuce, but squirrels munch on it in my garden. How safe is it to eat? I can't imagine the squirrels have made it unsafe to eat.
No, they usually don't. It's just a nuisance usually. Controlling squirrels, is tricky. Some gardeners will put a bunch of peanuts out in a regular place, and the squirrels will prefer the peanuts. Wire mesh is the best suggestion for birds and squirrels to keep them out of the garden, things like that.
What about if you're growing blueberries? How do you keep them away from birds?
I have blueberries in my own backyard, and there's a netting you can use. But actually, I don't mind the birds eating my. I just share them with the birds. And there's enough blueberries on my high bush blueberry that I could still get 6 pints from that one bush and share them with the birds. But if you do have a problem with that, you could cover them with some netting. Most of the local home centers have them, or some light bird netting. They get tangled in the netting and they won't land on your blueberries. You could cover your blueberry bushes.
Donald from Jersey City, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon. This year I've had a particular problem with powdery mildew on my tall hedge. I usually have it a little bit, and I spray it with liquid copper fungicide. Mm-hmm. This year the leaves are actually coming in with the where they're all discolored and have the fungus on them.
Right.
And I'm really worried about it. I'm not quite sure what to do.
Yeah, unfortunately, if it gets to the point where there's so much powdery mildew, that fungus on the leaves, it'll reduce the amount of photosynthesis. And that, as you know, is what plants need to make their food. And that could really weaken the plant. But what you're using, the copper fungicide, which is organic, you could get it from any of the websites, Garden Alive, Peaceful Valley. You put that down, and then you avoid wetting the leaves.
Right, I've been careful about that, but of course it's raining so much.
Yeah, you could also lightly brush it off if you think it's possible, with a sponge and lukewarm uh-huh. water and soap, if that's possible on some plants, you
right,
can
well,
do that.
How about this, really cutting it severely back?
Yeah, you could cut it back, but... What kind of plant did you say it was again? A hedge?
I'm sorry.
It's tall and it covers the entire front of the house.
Yeah, that's a lot of hedge to wash or to... cutting it back would be dramatic, but you want to make sure you treat it after you cut it back.
Thank you so much for your call. A number of listeners have called in with other suggestions for slugs. One says cut an aluminum can in half, pour in beer, and leave that on the ground. The slugs will be attracted to it and then they drink it and they die. I guess alcohol poisoning, I don't know. Another person says that she heard that iron phosphate also will kill slugs.
Okay, I'll add a third one. Some gardeners collect the snails into a slurry, put them in the blender and chop them up and then pour it back in the garden. And snails who sense that know there's danger apparently and stay away. So you could use a snail and slug slurry. But those are other good suggestions. The slugs actually drown in the beer that they're attracted to. Good suggestions.
Michael from Massapequa. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I have tomato plants that I got some tomatoes now, but every flower I get now just dies, turns brown and dies.
Hmm.
I know aphids can sometimes do that.
Well, it could be a couple of things. The brown is, often the terminal leaves and the flowers are the first that are affected by drought. Is it growing in the ground or in a container?
No, it's in the ground.
It's in the ground. Okay, first thing is make sure it's kept constantly moist, evenly moist in this heat, and that will take care of that. The other thing is if you applied anything that could possibly have burned the flowers or the tips of the plant. But
well, I put a fertilizer down earlier in the season, but I've gotten tomatoes since then.
Yeah, that shouldn't have done it. So you haven't applied anything recently.
No.
If you're keeping the soil moist, that should be no problem. Is it all of the flowering buds or just some of them?
No, it seems to be all of them. It doesn't seem like I'm getting any new tomatoes.
Yeah, sometimes you have a hornworm that could chew off the flowers as well, and then there's something called a nutrient deficiency that causes the flowers not to develop. So I don't know if you're fertilizing them with a balanced fertilizer, but sometimes
I've put Miragrow on, but nothing regularly.
Okay. Well, I would say that I would think there'd be something chewing those flowers, and be a little vigilant and see if you notice any insect activity, and then keep the nutrients at the right level, and that should help.
Thanks so much for your call. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, talking with Gerard Lord-Dahl, who's the director of the Open Space Greening Program, the Department of the Environment. Is it Department? Council of the Environment?
Council of the Environment, right.
The City of New York. My staff wants me to ask you what you like as a fertilizer for plants. Are the commercial ones like Miracle-Gro any good?
Actually, I like a compost tea. If you do compost, it's great to mix some water in that compost and go totally organic. And I also like fish emulsion, which is a nice organic top dressing that you could use this time of year to give your vegetables and flowers a boost. I just wanted to remind your listeners.
Can I put some fish oil tablets in?
It's a little different. I would just go with the fish emulsion. Don't fertilize your roses anymore at this point. Those of you who love growing your roses in the garden, it weakens the growth and you don't want frost damage in the winter. And then to remind your listeners also, Leonard, August is the month where you could plant your fall vegetable garden. So if you had some challenges in the spring with your garden, you have another opportunity now to plant those crops that like the cool weather, like spinach and kohlrabi and cabbage and cauliflower. You know, we still have a couple of hundred days left of the growing season. We can garden in zone 6-7 till about the beginning of December. So this is, take advantage of this cool weather crop. And carrots overwintering are much tastier. Collard greens are tastier. Kale and all those mustard greens are really tastier when the cool weather comes. So think about starting a fall vegetable garden now.
Sarah from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I shop what's called Youth Market. And when I shop, I hear a lot of people asking about the produce, and they say it comes from what's called community-supported agriculture. I was wondering if you could tell me what that was about and how it may be different from the produce sold at the green market.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Youth Market is a fairly new project that we have at the Council on the Environment, and it involves connecting the community gardens with local high schools in the Bronx and the green market farmers. So, for instance, there's a community garden called the JDD Garden in the Bronx at 165th Street and Boston Road. And there are teenagers growing vegetables in that garden. It's a community garden through their school with the Council on the Environment. They then harvest those vegetables, and the local farmer to the Bronx Green Market supplements the farm stand, which is basically what a youth market is. And people from the community in the Bronx can get locally grown produce, which is supplemented by a green market farmer, as well as grown by Bronx high school students right at 165th and Boston Road.
So you're helping kids actually learn more about how to grow.
Exactly.
And the same, you're supporting your local community.
Right. And we're teaching kids about better food habits, and it's an entrepreneurial experience for the kids as well.
Thank you so much for your call, Sarah. Andrew from Manhattan. No, from where is this? Mendham, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm looking for an alternative to a product like Roundup to kill weeds and light brush. And I'm wondering if I sprayed a strong salt brine solution on the leaves, if that would kill any grasses and brush that I may want to get rid of.
You will have some effect on some of the broadleaf weeds. Grasses are a bit of a challenge with a salt solution, but you're right. Salt can have a devastating effect in a concentrated form on many plants, particularly broadleaf. You know, the best thing for us is to pull them out. I mean, I know that's hard. You could also buy these propane torches. You could actually burn the weeds. It's a propane torch. You put it on as a backpack. The landscapers use it, and you actually burn the weeds off of the pavement.
Richard called in to ask about tomato plants with blight. Can they be composted at the end of the season, or would they affect the compost?
It's interesting. You should not put diseased plants into the compost pile because it's very likely that that disease organism is going to overwinter, and then when you add the compost the following spring, you'll reinfect your garden. So you should not compost diseased plant material.
Another listener asks, she says that she has planted summer squash and tomatoes in pots on her deck, and squirrels ate all the squash blossoms. Now they're eating the green tomatoes. What can she do? Her plants are in pots. She can't build some giant structure around them to protect them.
Yeah, it's tricky. And you don't need to build a giant structure, but hardware cloth, wire mesh, turkey wire, chicken wire. These are simple available materials that you could get at only any home improvement place with some bamboo stick, and that you could create a cage around them, and it doesn't take much effort.
Linda, hi, you're on the air. Linda from Long Island.
Hi, Leonard, love your show. Just wanted to ask, I have a rose bush that this is the second year in the row. It flowered, it got leaves, it flowered, and then all the leaves fell off.
Okay. I don't know without looking at the situation, but roses, they're a little high maintenance. They like to be kept moist. You need to fertilize them. You need to prune them. It could have been a lot of things, but the way you described it sounds like possibly a lack of moisture. If the whole thing had the leaves drop, that could be part of the problem. It also could be that it wasn't getting enough sunlight. Or if you sprayed anything, a weed killer, any kind of herbicide, for the leaves to all drop at once, that's either, could be a transplanting problem, water, or not enough sun.
Could it be mildew or no?
Usually not like that. Mildew attacks over a long period of time. You don't see everything drop at once. Leaves drop all of a sudden if there's a gas leak or something like that. But when you have that sudden, that's strange.
We have run out of time, Gerard, and a lot of people couldn't get through. Is there a way they can reach you?
Yeah, absolutely. You could contact us at cenyc.org, and then you could call us also at 212-788-7935, and you could leave your questions, and we'll be happy to send you information through the mail.
And CENYC stands for Council on the Environment, New York City.
Right, www.cenyc.org.
And Gerard Lordahl is director of the Open Space Greening Program of the Council on the Environment of New York City. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks, Leonard. It's always fun to be here.